The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Well, hello once again, Dirtfish Rally friends, and welcome to Spin, the Rally Pod. This one is, well, it's a little bit different, I guess, because we don't often get too many new events in the WRC, but it's a post Central European Rally, Spin the Rally Pod, with myself, Colin Clark, with George Donaldson, our ex-team boss. George, how are you doing?
Never better, Colin, thank you. Just very excited to get to chat post-event these days. Normally you guys are doing these straight after the rally, so it's so great to get to contribute. It's almost unexpected. Was I unprepared? You'll find out.
Oh, you're never unprepared, George. And you know, we missed you on the post-event analysis, so we thought, you know, we might as well do it right. Excuse me. If we're going to do it, we might as well do it right. Get George Donaldson in. But if we're going to really do it right, then we have to get our Dirtfish editor in, Luke Barry.
That was classic.
That was good. That started really well, Colin. That was high-class flattery, and then it kind of plateaued a little bit and fell down. No,
it's not, because I was terrified of making the mistake I make every time and calling you Luke Barry. Sorry,
I might just change it by deed poll now, Colin. I'd just be Luke Barry now and make it simple for you. But then you'd probably call me Barry, wouldn't you?
I would. That's terrible, isn't it? That's terrible. You know this, George, and I've mentioned it a million times, and it's nothing to do with the individuals. It's all to do with my dopey brain.
I suffer the same thing, Colin.
Some names that I just have mental blocks over. And yours, just because you know, I kind of picture you in my head, Luke, and I hear beautiful songs. I see a fabulous actor. I see you're a soap star from the UK. And I want to say Barry. I really do. That's bad, isn't it?
Yeah, sadly, I'm not any of those things you just described, so that's definitely not me. But yeah, happy to be here. Subbing in, I guess, for David Evans, who's taking a rare thing called a holiday. He's not always the best at that, is David, bless him, but good on him for taking a week off.
He'll be on my doorstep then. If he's on holidays in Scotland because it's cold and wet, one assumes.
quite likely, isn't it? Quite likely. Yeah. But there we go.
You're not subbing in for anyone, by the way, Luke. You are a integral part of Spin the Rally Pod.
Okay, well, the flattery's back up, so that's a good sign, Colin. We've recovered points.
I've made up for my nonsense.
You have.
Very good. So anyway, it is myself, it is George Donaldson, and it is Luke Barry bringing you all the analysis from the Central European Rally. First of all, boys, it was a little bit of a topic of debate. Before we go and talk about the rally itself, and, you know, one or two things that came out of the rally, actually there was plenty that came out of the rally that we can discuss. Let's discuss the name. That was one of the strongest talking points in our car over the weekend. We're not impressed with the name Central European Rally. It's a bit clinical. It's a bit kind of CER. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just lacks a little bit of imagination for me. And I think we were all in agreement, certainly in the Dirtfish car, and we were in the car rather a lot for the 5 or 6 days of the event, and that CER, Central European Rally, it just isn't kind of exotic, sexy, exciting enough, really.
Well, can they go with CAD or DAC? That's the mnemonics,
even worse,
isn't it? Yeah, even worse.
Even,
yes.
Mnemonics is
that's Czech, Deutschland, and Austria in some form of mnemonic. Yeah, it's not great either, is it?
Oh dear.
I wonder if they've done it just so they can have scope to move it. And I'm thinking specifically about an ERC event. I know Royal Rally of Scandinavia is deliberately called Royal Rally of Scandinavia, so that it can move around Scandinavia if it needs to. I don't think it will, at least for the short term, but I wonder if there's a bit of that going on. But it's an interesting one. I never thought about it, I'll be honest. Then I wasn't sitting in a car for hours like you were with time to think. So I don't know.
I have to say, I thought the rally itself was pretty good. You know, the character of the roads, the visuals we were getting out of it, it looked great. But again, saved by the fact it was a wet rally, because if it had been a dry rally, I'm afraid it would have been potentially a little bit ordinary.
George, are you trying to move us on from my enthralling discussion about CER?
No. Well, it's that I'm bored with that. Yes, I'm moving you on, Colin.
I was going to say to Luke that Royal Scandinavian Rally, or Royal, what is it? Royal Rally of Scandinavia.
Yeah,
that's a fabulous name. That's the kind of name that they have to come up with. I'm thinking the Lower Alpine Rally or something like that. It's just got something about it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Yeah, it's a fair point. Like, to use the Scandinavian example, and I'm going too far with that, but the royal aspect gives it something, doesn't it? It's a bit of an oomph.
Well, I suppose you could go back to the archaic names for these areas, you know. You've got different areas in Germany, Saxony, and you've got the Eifel, and you've got down in Bavaria, you know. So you're not in any of those areas. So there must be, that area must have a generic sort of name that they could probably adopt. It's the North Alps Rally or something. I don't know, because you're just out. I mean, you can look across at the Alps pretty well from there. I mean,
George, it was
just
utterly
it's
beautiful.
Right there. Yeah, were they snow covered? Were they snow clad?
Well, they were just snow speckled, shall we say? You could see them, particularly on Sunday morning. The first stage on Sunday morning was just in the low foothills and looking south and kind of south. Well, it would have been southwest, George, I'm not quite sure. But looking south, certainly, you could see the Alps and they looked absolutely gorgeous. But where we were, where the rally ran, the place we were staying was at just over 1,000 metres. So just over 3,000 feet. We actually went even higher. At one point, we went up to 1,300 metres.
I think I saw a photograph of you at an outlook, yes.
Yeah, so you know, we were fairly high up, and let's move on then from the name. Apologies if that bored you, Georgie boy. You were quite right. Let's talk about the rally then, and let's talk about the challenge. You did say there that you thought that the rain kind of made it, and it might not have been quite so enthralling, exciting, dramatic, maybe if we'd not had the rain. I'm not sure, George. I'm not sure, because certainly in the Czech Republic, that first day, the Friday stages, they were so nadgery. They were so tight and narrow. Yeah. And, you know, at this time of year, whether it's raining or not, they're slippery. It's greasy. There's a mossy kind of greenness to the tarmac.
Yeah, I think as long as it stays at this time of year, it'll probably be okay, Colin. You're probably right. And in fairness, you know, you look at the competition when it did dry out, it was still pretty tight. And, it was obviously the mud was the thing that was catching people out, the varying road condition, but it looked to me that it was a great fight going on between Thierry, Calle and Elvet, you know, and it had initially settled into a pattern, but Thierry was quite convinced that he was catching, you know, at least post-event, Thierry was quite sure he was catching Calle anyway, you know, he was going to catch him anyway, if you listen to the tone of his voice. He was certainly on a mission, that was for sure.
He was on a mission, and you know, we see it very often, don't we? I don't think you can say that, you know, even with a 35-second lead, you know, obviously Thierry Neuville, Elvin Evans, until Elvin made his mistake, you know, they were putting pressure on him. You've got to keep it absolutely 100% neat and tidy. Yes, Robin Perra was able to adapt his strategy Saturday morning, but did it work? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, Robin Perra says, and you have to believe him, and I suppose the stage times do back him up. You know, as soon as he heard that Elvin was off the road, he completely throttled back, which you can understand.
You can understand.
But he'd lost, don't forget, in the stage before that, 25 seconds. His lead was down to 10 seconds. Yep. He lost that 25 seconds because he made a mistake.
Yes.
And it's such an easy rally, or it was such an easy rally to make mistakes on. There were very, very few drivers who came through without any big moments. Maybe Takamoto Katsuta was one, and maybe Teemu Suninen was another, who didn't really have any enormous moments. But, you know, at the level that we were seeing Saturday morning with those top three guys, and I wouldn't quite include Oik Tanak in that, but certainly the top three, anyone was likely to make a mistake pushing on at that kind of pace.
Yeah. In fairness to Oik, he was saying that, you know, obviously his car wasn't capable of giving him a setup for those incredibly wet, slippy conditions. He made that quite clear, but didn't make any bones about it. He just said, look, I'm not going to be able to get the setup to be able to push in these conditions to get the latitude he was looking for. When it dried out on Sunday, his times definitely took a step up, to my view, and he was back in the fray. You know, that Puma in the dry conditions, I think, you know, if it was a dry rally, I think we'd have seen him a lot closer to the pack. I believe.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I believe, you know, that was just an extrapolation I made, but
yeah, no, I think I think you're right. It was a bit of a strange one, Luke, wasn't it? The fact that he was saying, you know, that I need the car. This is like Tanak was saying, you know, I need the car to be softer, but we can't soften it. It's, you know, we just can't. We've got what we've got, and what we've got is a car that's too hard.
It was a rare comment for a driver to make, that, wasn't it? I agree with you. But it was, just to go backwards a little bit on Rovenpera and Yuvil, and apologies to skate us around a bit too much, but what I think is really fascinating to ponder, and it's impossible, it's one of these, and I'm bad for this, I do this all the time, I think about things that might have happened, which is kind of pointless because we're never going to know. But if Rovenpera hadn't had that fairly wild moment when he locked up, didn't he, and he ended up through a bit of a clearing in between the trees, whether that was a save or just potluck, it's probably a mixture of both. He didn't collect any trees, but if he hadn't lost those 25 seconds or whatever it was there, would he still have backed off to the same extent knowing Elvin had gone off? I think possibly yes, but with a 35 second lead versus 10, I think it's easier to give up a 10 second lead when you think, right, I could be caught here anyway, where there's over half a minute. It's an interesting psychology, but I was almost, and it sounds weird to say this because it makes complete sense, but I was almost surprised that Cali did that, just the way he is, and his will to win is so strong. Part of me thought he would still just go for it, so it's quite interesting to see that he was prepared to essentially give up the win in order for the championship. Now, obviously, you look at it, that was the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's still sort of, I wouldn't, to say it surprised me is too strong, but it's kind of like, I didn't necessarily immediately expect it from Cali. If it was maybe Elvin in this situation and Rovenpera's one had gone off, I would have expected it immediately, because Evans is a very, very calculated driver. But it was interesting to see that side of Cali, I thought, at the weekend.
But this is frightening, Luke. This is really frightening. He's 23 years old, and this is another step up in terms of the evolution of him as a driver. You know, you're right. He is an absolute winner. But, you know, in the past, we've seen great champions who are great champions because they are just the fastest. You know, the fastest over a series of rallies, over a season, whatever it might be. And then we see other drivers who, over the course of a season, are great champions because they're the most intelligent. What Rovenpera is showing, that he's got intelligence and he's got pace. And it was the intelligence that we saw there, the patience, the intelligence, the maturity. You're right, I think last year in the situation, and he said this year's campaign was very different from last year's. I think last year he'd have pushed on and he'd have wanted to take the win. But, you know, he's a different driver. He's a more mature driver. He's a more thoughtful driver, a more intelligent driver.
Yep.
And he knew, he knows. He'll have studied history. Okay, maybe not to the same extent that, say, Jari Mäty has. But he knows that drivers have lost championships in the most extraordinary of circumstances.
Oh, and then some. You know, how that is, Colin. How true that
you
is.
You know, back to when Carlos lost it in Morgan Park, George. You know, he knows that. He knows that. And he knows, you know, it's a mechanical sport. It's a sport that's got more contributing outside factors than just about any other form of motorsport. And he now understands that. And for me, you know, if you're his opponents thinking, ah, next year we're going to have him, you know, just makes it that much more difficult.
It really is. And it was so nice to see that mature approach. It was surprising and rewarding because, you know, it for me, it divines a knowledge he understands our sport, he appreciates it. And for the first time in hearing him for a while, you know, I think he actually has really enjoyed the outcome of this. This has been a really hard fought, hard thought out, hard won championship. I know he's got it one event early, but ultimately it's still been a tough year for him, where he's had to take a measured approach to everything to ensure he got the championship. And he basically, you know, he did. He got it. He's, although it was close with Elfin, I think he's definitely stamped his authority on it. It would be unfair to say any less to him. And it's not taking anything away from Elfin to say that, because Elfin, I mean, we can talk about that another time, but Elfin he can do this, but it's going to have to, he's going to have to really capture so many things. Like I say, we can talk about it another time. But I felt for the first time listening to Callie that he's enjoying his sport again somehow. Somehow felt he enjoyed this more. Yeah. And I really did get the feeling he enjoyed this rally. And, you know, yeah. I could see him here for another 6 or 7 years, 10 years, whatever. Oof. I'd like to think maybe. That. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? Any other sport other than rallying, honestly speaking, I try really, really hard to love all other motorsports. But it comes back to the thing. And I know that our sport is a little bit denuded compared to what it used to be. And the cross-country rallies are great. And they're still as more or less as big as they ever were in some ways. I still think that WRC racing these cars on the roads that we do, it is the prince of motorsports. It's the king. Mm-hmm. It's the supreme. It's the emperor of all motorsport. That's what I think rally is. And when someone says, oh, I want to go and do this, well, fine, you know, go and do Le Mans for fun. Go and do Paris-Dakar for fun. In fact, actually, Paris-Dakar is kind of close to us, to be honest. You know, the Dakar. It's pretty special. I concede that. But I can't get myself enthusiastic about everything else. So when I hear of people wanting to go off and do other things, I'm bored. Okay, away you go.
George, in some ways, I think part of what you're saying there, I totally agree with. You know, he is a remarkable young man. You know, 2 times World Rally Champion, and he's only just turned 23. Mm-hmm. What was it, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, on the Sunday when we were in Chile, he was 23. It is the most phenomenal achievement. And 10 years ago, maybe even less, well, 10 years ago, definitely, you'd have said it was almost impossible for someone of his age to win a World Rally Championship.
Yeah, you wouldn't have had the experience. No way in the world. How he's condensed. Exactly. Even the, you know, I know Seb, sorry to interrupt, but Seb Ogier has quite often said, oh, you know, don't think that Kyla Rovanperä has not got the experience. Well, he's got lots of driving experience, but it's the nous that you need on rallies. It's that level of experience. And the guy just seems to have absorbed it at the most phenomenal rate and done the most remarkable job. It really is. He has taken something away from the supremacy of Sebastian Loeb and Sebastian Ogier because he's done it so young. You know, that makes him special. You know, I think they're all special.
If he decided, you know, his contract's up at the end of this year and we've not heard anything. We're all assuming it's going to be business as usual next year, and I think that's a fair assumption to make. How long that contract will be is another matter. Will it be 2 years? Will it be 3 years? I don't know. But you know what? If he decided that, nah, I've had enough. Two championships is enough for me, and he walked away, look, I would still say you'd have a healthy debate as to whether he was potentially the greatest rally driver we've ever seen. I that's a big call, but I think you would have a healthy debate. You'd put him right up there.
Oh, yeah.
With Loeb, with Ogier, and you know, and the one or two others that you can easily put into that discussion. But you know, if he walked away with two championships, you'd still potentially say he was the greatest rally driver ever.
I like where you're going with that, because it's easy to get sucked into the statistics, and I'm not saying that they don't mean anything, because of course, Loeb's 9 world championships, all in a row, his 80 world rally wins. They're crazy, crazy numbers. But I don't think anybody thinks he's clearly better than Ogier just because he's got one championship. It is, as you say, a debate. Many people still regard Colin McRae as the best rally driver ever. And he's got, what, 8 less titles than Loeb? He's certainly not 8 times worse a rally driver. So it's not all about the numbers. It is fascinating how it depresses me a little bit, to be honest, without wishing to reveal my age. I say that I'm about to, but I'm still at that point where I struggle to contemplate that there are sports men and women athletes out there that are achieving things and they're younger than me. I'm just kind of not on board with that concept yet. So I've got a few years.
You've not realised you're an adult yet then.
I'm in this very strange transition, George, but I should look at the back of my head and the balding scalp. That probably tells me, doesn't it? But anyway, that's a personal matter.
Don't worry about it, Luke. I was 65 last week, and I've not realised I'm an adult yet.
Georgie!
We missed your birthday.
Were you 65 last week?
I was 65 last week, Colin.
How did I miss that? Happy birthday, big George.
I don't do birthdays. I wasn't even at home for my birthday.
No, you did.
I was at work, and I had to stay up for a company dinner. So nobody knew it was my birthday. That's the way I like it to be.
You've just told the rallying world now, George. So next year,
so it's in a
big
week.
Party.
Good luck. Good luck. Like, nobody cares. It's okay. I'm a nobody.
George,
it's okay.
Yesterday, George. It's yesterday not, it we celebrated yesterday. Your 50th in Japan.
No, it wasn't.
It was nearly yesterday. It feels like yesterday we celebrated your 50th.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. Yes, it does. It does, I remember. Was that the day we marched around trying to find the restaurant?
Yes.
Oh, that
yes,
was a
we've
good
told
day.
The story many
that
times.
That was a good night. That was a great night.
Oh, God, I can't believe that's 15 years ago.
I can't believe it. I feel incredibly guilty for missing that, George. But just
I don't publicise my birthday. Even in Facebook, it's falsified. I falsified, and you know, I'm desperate to get off Facebook, really, and I have been since the first day I started it. I had to go on it because Colin had put something up that he said I had to see, and that's why I joined Facebook. It's all Colin's fault.
I can believe
and then,
that.
And then a couple of years or a couple of months later, I had to do Twitter as well. And oh, God. And I look at them very rarely. So anybody want to contact me, don't send me a message on Facebook. It might not get to me for months at a time. I will eventually look and I will answer.
Just steer us back off for Bertha just a little bit, just to finish my point. I got myself wrapped up. But
your point.
No, all good. Yeah. It's my fault. I started talking
drivers.
About
Adrian. We're talking drivers here. Greatest of all time.
But yeah, I think what Cowley has proved this year, if he had to prove anything, is that he can do it no matter what the circumstances are. And I know there's a lot of talk already because he mentioned it at the end of the rally, immediately actually after he'd won it, that this championship almost means more to him because of how he's had to do it. And we all talked about it at the start of the year. We've seen it throughout the year. I think it was up until at least Croatia. The championship leader just kept changing event after event. Everybody was separated by literally a handful of points. Like maybe 10 points separated five drivers or something. They were all, Ogier was in there at the time. We knew he wasn't going to be a serious contender, but they were all incredibly close. So Robin Power really had to dig deep this year for this. And it's not to discredit anything he did last year, because that was a different side to him. He was brilliant. Others had their problems. And he had such a gap that he kind of do anything. And we saw that he had a couple rallies, thinking Ypres and Greece last year, that didn't go well, but it didn't matter. He was still so far ahead that it was never going to be a threat to the ultimate outcome. But what he's done this year against the competition he's had is remarkable. I think we all knew he could do it, but it's amazing to see it. And it's one of those that I think, I can't remember who it was that wrote it or said it, but and it's not that the likes of Ogier had it easy at VW or Loeb had it easy in the mid-2000s, but it was easier than having to come up against. So I think a lot of people, for example, would place a lot more value on Ogier's 2017 title, for example, in the M Sport car with bigger competition than they would in VW, when he clearly had the
that
best
car.
It was
that
his
was
team.
A very hard-won championship, that was. That was a brilliant, hard-won championship, And I'll bet you if you spoke to him, he wouldn't want to maybe say which one was his favourite, but I imagine that M Sport one was probably one of his favourites.
It would have to be, wouldn't it?
It would have to be. It would absolutely have to be, yeah.
He didn't really get comfortable with that car until, four rallies in, five rallies in, really until we came to Europe. And don't forget that year, there were seven different winners as well in the championship. It was the most remarkable year. You are so right about Robin Perra saying this was a different kind of championship. Mm-hmm. And it's a different Robin Perra, and you see it. You see it. We certainly saw it in the first half of the year. His demeanour was a bit different from the demeanour that we saw last year, and I don't know. I don't know where it goes from here, but I'm not agreeing with you at all, George. I don't think we will see him for six or seven more years.
I think
we'll see him for the length of this contract, and then I suspect he'll go and try different things. I fully expect we will see him returning.
That's a possibility. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that happening, because he'll go away and then realise how right I am. He obviously wasn't listening to this podcast and taking this earnest advice. And he'll go away and do something else and say, this is crap, I'm going to go back to rallying, that's much better.
Sometimes you need that bit of realisation, George, and whether it's telling them or them actually doing it themselves. You know, Sebastian Ogier is a pretty good case in point. You know, he's part-time, and there are multiple reasons for why he's only driving part-time and why he doesn't want a full-time season. But one of those in the beginning was that he wanted to have a real go at sports cars, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he was involved with that Toyota team. What was it, Luke? It wasn't the factory Toyota team, it was a satellite team, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, that was a bit of a downer, that was, wasn't it? Why was he put in that team? I mean, they gave him a test, and was he not good enough?
I'm trying to think what team it was now. It's going to really, really wind me up. I think what it was called.
It was sponsored by his watch sponsor by what are they called?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You're not plugging it for free, Colin. Don't worry.
No. But I think that was the team, George.
It was named after somebody, yeah, or something. Yeah, that's going to really irritate me. Yeah, anyway, you're right. The point is.
So he went and he discovered that actually, from being untouchable, in your arguably the second highest profile motorsport championship in the world, he's gone down to something that's maybe not quite so glamorous, maybe not quite so high profile, and he struggled, and he really struggled, and you know, and that kind of quietly just slipped away, didn't it? All the talk was a bit of an apprenticeship in the satellite team and then up into the factory team.
Yeah,
that all went by the way. And I do wonder, Ogier is a family man, we know that, and we know that he loves and cherishes his family time. But he's also still young. Ogier's only 39.
Yeah.
Okay, he's 40 shortly, but he's only 39. And I do wonder what he does going forward. He doesn't apparently really see cross-country rallying as something he wants to do right now. But, you know, he's gone off, he's tried something else, and maybe it could be a return to rallying.
I think he would be brilliant at cross-country because he is a very considered guy, you know. He really is. Yeah. He's brilliant. So I think he could do very well at that. But it's interesting to see some drivers have managed it and some haven't. You know, Bjorn Waldegard went to do the cross-country rally following Juha Kankkonen not Juha Kankkonen at that time, I don't think. I think Juha had maybe done one or two. But he never seemed to crack the cross-country in the same way that Ari Vatanen did, which is very surprising because Bjorn was one of the most considered, you know, drivers for longer events like Safari. You know, he should have been brilliant. Yeah.
But George, I want to get back to the Central European Rally, and we will get back.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. Yes.
I was just going to say, you know, the argument about rallying greats making cross country greats is a difficult one, because some. What's the word I'm going to use to describe Nasser's rallying career, stage rallying career? It was successful, but it was never at the highest level. And Nasser goes into cross country and is the absolute king of cross country rallying.
It's the opposite of Loeb, that though, isn't it? In a way, because Loeb is there in cross country, but he's never won anything big yet. I know he's been close to it, but you're right. I think it's very. And I'm sure there's going to be somebody and we're going to embarrass ourselves, but I cannot think of a single person that's been properly. I know the World Championship in cross country is new as of last year, but has been generally the best at both. They're obviously similar, but they don't require the same things of a driver. So, but anyway, we shall go back to CER, shall we? The Snap-on
team. Richard Mill.
There you go.
That watch team.
All rallying. One source. By now, you know that dirtfish.com is the place to go for all of your rallying news. But when it's time to try your hand behind the wheel, just join us here at Dirtfish Rally School, nestled in the Cascade Mountains in Snoqualmie, Washington. Whether you're a pro seeking extra seat time or a novice looking to get started, we've got programs tailored to all rallying needs. And when you want to watch the best in the world, just head over to our YouTube channel. Our coverage of the WRC and American rallying is second to none. Follow us at Dirtfish Rally across all social media platforms and shop the latest looks in our merchandise store now. As always, rally on.
You know, we have discussed a bit about Thierry Neuville, second win of the season. Really, really important that Neuville got that win. Something that I said before the rally, I do get the feeling that Neuville, this whole Neuville Tanak situation in Hyundai next year is going to be really interesting. It's going to be maybe not quite as juicy as it got last year. But I suspect it's going to throw up some really interesting situations. And Neuville is having to reassert his authority in that team. And, you know, he came across as such a almost statesman-like, some of his statements, some of the things he talked about during the event. I thought, yeah, there's something going on here. Whereas Tanak, on the other hand, at times seemed petulant. At times again, you know, and you understand that in very different situations. Mm-hmm. Tanak clearly is frustrated with a lot of things right now. But, you know, Thierry Neuville, for me, really needed that win. And I think he will go to Japan. And I also think he could well win Japan. And that very much puts him in the box seat next year in that that Hyundai team. It really will. It really will. And okay, you know, it'll be a joint team effort. And he was at pains to stress that in an interview we did with him earlier on in the week, that next year it has to be a team effort. And he talked about various things, sharing data and all the rest. But I think there is an awful lot going on in terms of the dynamics there that have already started even before Oitz joined the team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not particularly smart, to be honest, really. You know, shouldn't be having a posture like that. It should all be just a given. The team is sacred. You know, the drivers can come and go, as we know, and there's a fair degree of loyalty there. But, you know, do you think for a second that if Thierry got an offer to go and drive Toyota next year that he wouldn't take it? Of course he would. He'd be gone. But your team is still there. All your employees are still there. You've got to think team.
To be fair, George, that's what he said. He more or less said that. You know, the team is what it's all about. He more or less said that.
Yeah, there's words and there's actions. You know.
Yeah.
We know that young Oliver Solberg didn't have a happy time in that team, and wasn't given much. You know, he was very. He never actually said directly that he didn't get a fair shake of the stick, but I would suggest that he didn't get a fair shake of the stick. I think it wasn't necessarily an unfair situation. I think it was just a circumstance, but it was there. And obviously Ott felt the same last year as well. Obviously didn't feel that he was in a good place. New management, we know it's a different situation. I'm hoping that Cyril will prove to be a strong leader and guide his team properly, but I think he's got his work cut out.
Yeah, so do I. But the great leaders, George, the great leaders can take on the most difficult of characters and the strongest of personalities, and a great leader can make them work together. And it's going to be a real test next year for Cyril, as you say. Back to the rally. Look, pros and cons. Let's talk pros and cons of CER, shall we? And then we'll talk about a few performances. Because, George, I know you want to discuss one or two drivers.
Keen.
Pros and cons of the rally. For me, now look, you give us your thoughts first. You were watching from a distance, but what were your thoughts on the rally?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably harder for me to digest one of the commonly voiced cons of the event, because we were saying it before we recorded, which isn't helpful, so I'll repeat it now. When you're watching at home, you're essentially just watching a tarmac rally. Yes, you know there are gaps, but you're not feeling of, like, again, it's like on Saturday I actually didn't realize that one of the stages had crossed into Germany. So we're in Germany now. Like, there's no physical way of knowing when you're at home. But I would say, and I shouldn't start the negative note, but I've teed it up, there was a lot of weirs on distances. I did some pretty sketchy math, and I reckon it is generally just about over 20% of the route was competitive, which isn't a brilliant ratio. And I know there's reasons for that, and the concept they're going for three countries, which I think was really cool. I really liked the idea. I think it's just one of those that it's a completely new it's not like an event that stepped up to WRC. This event had never ever run before last weekend, so everything was new, so you can definitely excuse it. And we saw it with Japan last year. There are things to iron out that I'm assuming have been sorted for this year. So every event is going to have its small teething issues, shall we call it. But it definitely seemed that the distances could, or maybe the route planning could have been improvised, that's not the right word, implemented a bit more effectively. Pro side, the stages looked good. I think Friday's one in the Czechs were very fast, very muddy, with obviously the rain coming down. We'd be curious to see what they're like if it wasn't such difficult weather. But they did seem particularly different in character to what we had later in the weekend, which was nice. That's what we were hoping we would get. So it seemed like there was good feedback from it. That's about all I can really offer from watching it on the TV,
fairness. The one thing that just made me sit up and think that you said there, Luke, was that you're watching it on television or watching it remotely. You didn't get a feeling of the logistics involved. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. So if you're saying that what the experience that you had of the rally, which let's face it, is the experience of the vast majority of people who are following the rally, because the vast majority of people follow in front of their computers, in front of their televisions or telephones, whatever. You know, but if you're getting a good impression of the rally, as in the competition, the challenge, the drama, and not seeing the negative side of it, then is that not all we should be concentrating on? Because ultimately, that's what we want to do. And if people have to get up a little bit earlier to drive a few more miles, should they not just accept that that's part of their job? I suspect so. But having said that, you know, there were enough high-profile dissenting voices about the length of road sections that I do suspect that things will be different next year in terms of the road sections. Mm-hmm. It is a bit strange, George, and it must be alien to you, you know, having experienced 20, 22-hour days, sometimes, I guess, 24-hour days in rallies of the past, to hear people complaining about only getting 5 or 6 hours sleep a night.
Yeah.
That must be a bit alien and galling to you.
Well, it isn't. I mean, I think the days of, you know, accepting that, I mean, it was horribly tough and not very pleasant. I mean, we obviously did it because that's what you did. These days, you know, you're opening yourself up to all forms of legal issues, aren't you? So nobody does it anymore. So, I mean, that's just the way of the world, and just accept that. Yeah, I think you've kind of got to give people at least 6 or 7 hours rest. Probably have to give them an 8 hour off or something like that. But I think there was plenty of time off. It's the fact that, you know, people now do so much, that the drivers do so much homework in between each stage and at the end of the day and every single rest break, their homework. Talk about squeezing the joy out of the sport. I think they've managed to do that with that.
It's true.
You know, here they had gravel crews, so I assume that the strain was a little bit less, but they're all used to looking at videos of the stages and seeing them and getting access to it. And, you know, I heard Thierry at one point use his dangerous word again. This stage is dangerous. OK, so let's not do that stage again, Thierry. In fact, this whole rally's dangerous. I'll tell you what, Terry, you just stay at home, mate. If you think this is dangerous, let's just stay at home. That's fine. Mm. You know, he used that word again this weekend, at least on one occasion, and I don't think it's very smart. It's not doing our sport any favours. As to the length of the day, yeah. Look, gone are the days when we can run 5 days, you know, 4 days overnight nonsense. That's all a thing of the past. I love the fact that it got around a little bit. I thought it worked quite well. I was looking at them, you know, I followed it on the map as well as following the stages. I was full anorak this weekend. Watched all the crashes and then all the crashes, the offs and bits and pieces happily. I mean, nobody seemed to be horrendously hurt or anything. I thought for a dreadful minute they weren't going to restart Elfin on the Sunday, because Elfin at one point said, well, obviously I can't continue. I'm thinking, what? The camp? I watched the accident. It was a tiny wee touch of a barn. Of course, he was just talking about the day. He couldn't continue that
day.
Which was fine.
No, I don't think that was in any doubt.
No, I'm
at
sure
at all, George.
Obviously not.
So my thoughts on the rally. You know, I talked last week on Spin the Rally Pod about my concerns about crowd numbers. Got to say, the organisers did the most fantastic job. Mm-hmm. The very strange thing is that from Passau in the south, which is just in Germany, where the service park was, to, say, Prague in the north, you know, about 3.5 hour drive, mostly on what we would call country roads in the UK. Mm-hmm.
No, you know, motorways at all, motorways.
Well, George, we got onto the motorway last night to go back from Passau to Prague because we decided to avoid the rally area because we knew there'd be a lot of people on that road. And it was like, oh, my goodness me, we're on the motorway for the first time in 6 days. It was bizarre. So there was the potential there with all of these country roads for real, real problems. But the philosophy for the crowd management, the philosophy for the design of the rally came from Rally Germany. And we know Rally Germany always ran a really good event. They always looked after the spectators well. And, you know, they put multiple spectator zones throughout each stage.
Brilliant.
And it worked so well. Because what you do, rather than trying to cram 20,000 people into one great spot, you know, you're putting 20,000 people into 10 great spots.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? It means you know, you've got they had a great system for getting the cars off of the roads and into the parking areas. They weren't stopping them at the entrance to the parking area and taking the money off and creating queues on the main roads. They were taking them into the parking areas. They were taking their tickets off them there. They had facilities in all of these fan zones, quite often a screen, but in all of the fan zones there was catering. There were
properly
toilet
done.
Facilities.
I want to go and
honestly,
watch now. You've made me want to go,
done.
Colin. You've made me want to
it
go.
It was brilliantly done. You know, there was a bit of education to do, I think, on
always,
the Czech stages, for the Czech fans. There was quite a bit of free spectating, if you like, and we almost saw some awful consequences of that with the Lappy crash. That was frightening. That was really, really frightening. But, you know, a bit more education before next year, a little bit more of a tightening of the route. I've got to say, the service park was awful. Was awful. Was awful. And
nice.
Do you know what? No, George, we've talked about these things. The service park should be the beating heart of the rally, the core, the hub. It should be an attraction. You know, we were in a messy car park.
Colin, how can you be the centre of attraction when you don't even visit it on the first day of the rally, the first full day of the rally?
Well,
it's
that's
a joke.
Another
it's
point,
a joke
George.
Thing. It's a joke
that's
thing.
That's another point, George. And I feel for a lot of the people that went to an effort to try and make the service park decent. They're a nice indoor area. And there were one or two displays there. There was bits and pieces going on there. But you came out the back door of that and you were in gravelly mud and it was so tight. It was so narrow. It was so hidden away. Passau is one of Europe's most beautiful towns, cities, if you want to call it that. But, you know, you could have passed it by and we're in an industrial... Okay, we have to be, more often than not, in an industrial area. But give me blooming Toyota in Chester in North Wales any day over that type of service park that we had. I just don't think it should happen, George. I think, you know, we are told, an abundance of rallies that want to join the championship. An abundance. Mm-hmm. You know, we're oversubscribed. 8 or 10 rallies more than they can fit into the calendar. Well, one of the very straightforward criteria has to be a service park that you can make something out of. You know, we can't hide it away in it.
I tend to think. I understand what you're saying, but for me, then you'd need to have the service park out on a stage so that you can have a fan zone at it, and they can actually see a stage. Every time you come back, you have a stage at the service park.
Maybe.
You know, and they managed that in Perth, Australia. They actually created a stage that was one of the finest super special stages ever made. In fact, it's the finest super special ever, and a good valid test. Very spectacular, and they were allowed to use that, you know, 6 or 7 times in the same direction. You went through it every time you visited the service park, and that's how you make the service park fabulous. Because honestly, watching the cars being worked on is great for fans. It's fantastic. I understand that,
what you're saying there was actually something that was discussed a few years ago, and it was actually something that I thought was being actively sought. You know, they wanted rallies to join the calendar, they wanted existing rallies within the calendar to try and, wherever possible, and it's clearly not possible on all of them, to have a stage coming into the service park. And we saw it in Turkey, we saw it in Sweden, and in a number of different places we saw that, you know, events going above and beyond to deliver that requirement. And then we go to Germany or to the Central European Rally, and once again we go backwards by 20 years. 20 years we went backwards with that service park. I'm sorry to say, for me, that was the... I have no issues with the long road sections. I thought the stage is made up for... the stage is made up for the service park. The service park is not absolutely critical. And you know, I don't want to sound too critical, because the organisers did, I think, a really, really strong job with this rally. But, you know, for me, your service park is an integral part of the event, and we need to sell ourselves. At every possible opportunity, we need to sell ourselves. And the service park is a selling point, and when it becomes, you know, something that you're a bit embarrassed to go along to, then it ain't a selling point, is it?
No. No, it's not.
But there we go. Anyway, other than that, so my marks out of 10, I'm going to give the organisers 8 out of 10. Out of 10. Room for improvement, but overall a really good job avoiding some major issues. You know, the major issue was, I think, crowd control, and I think they did a really decent job with crowd control. I think they delivered great stages, and it was action-packed, and it was full of interest and intrigue, and we can't ask for anything more than that, can we?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. George, for a number of drivers, this was probably their last event of the year. I'm thinking in particular the likes of Pierre-Louis Loubet, Andreas Mikkelsen, one or two other youngsters. And you know what? The last event of the year is almost the most important event of the year. What are your thoughts on... let's start with Loubet, George. What are your thoughts on Loubet?
Well, actually, you know, once again, I think we've talked about it before. His expectations are above reality. You know, he's not a Sebastian Loeb or a Sebastian Ogier yet. He's not a Kalle Rovanperä in that, you know, he's had all those 15 years of build-up, you know, more... 16, 17 years of build-up through his career. He's got to come at it the way he can. He's quite clearly got great talent, but he's still to let himself mature, and the pace will build. And it's very, very hard for a driver to see that from their perspective. But I think he has improved this year. In many ways, it looks like he's not had the flashes of brilliance that he got, say, last year. And that's hard for him to accept. But every year is a learning year. Every mile, every problem you have makes you stronger. Even when it's a problem with the car, it's part of the game. It makes you stronger how you deal with it. You know, we noticed that he got a minute road penalty for not having his helmet done up right. Presumably that's because he was in a rush and he was having to deal with a problem and didn't quite get his helmet done up right. And, you know, we've seen the Ogiers getting similar, you know, or the top drivers getting similar penalties. It's not just on him, but it's all things that will make him stronger and better. And he will be quicker. You know, every event you go to, you will be quicker. It won't feel like it all the time. Missing Japan, great idea. By the time it comes to Monte Carlo, if he's got himself a programme, he'll be itching to get out there, desperate to get back out and prove himself. And what a great event to go on. You know, Monte Carlo, I think he'll be quite comfortable there. I mean, the conditions can be lovely, great traction, or horribly slippery, or a mixture of the two. You know, it's a great event, and he can go out and he'll do well. But you've just got to allow it to build. And another driver that you can say the same thing is Takamoto Katsuta. You know, as a driver, he won't see it right now, but I see strength upon strength. And, you know, if he can do another couple of years... another 2 years, and keep building the way he is, you know what? He's going to be knocking right on the door. He's going to be right up there, hitting for the podiums, the second places, the occasional win, you know? And maybe he can also build himself up to the point where he's supreme, get a championship. Mm. It's there. It's available. But it's not next week. You don't learn rallying like that. Okay, Kalle Rovanperä belies that truth, but it is a genuine truth. So not to be impatient. And yes, for these guys, it involves a huge amount of money. You know, I always say to anybody that says, oh, my son's a really good driver, I want him to be a rally driver. And I just turn around and say to them, well, let's assume that he's as good as you say he is. You need £6 million. And what do you mean? No, we'll do this and we'll get that. I said, you need £6 million is what you need. It might not be you that needs to find it. In fact, it's such a silly amount of money, it won't be you that finds it unless you're a multi-millionaire. Even at that, it's probably a stretch for people to spend that much money. But that's what it needs. I mean, what does a year... And if I phone up Malcolm tomorrow and ask him, I want to do the series in a Rally 1 car, I want the Rally 1 car, full spec, new parts on every event, what's that going to cost? What's that going to... And I'll decide.
£5 million.
Is it £5 million? Well, there you are. Just for 1 year. That's 1 year. Is it as much as that?
Yeah, I think per so. Event? I believe so. Wow. I might be wrong, but I believe it's knocking on.
In that case, Colin, you've preempted a really, really interesting point, because I think that actually means the current rally is totally invalid.
George, can I just make that, you know, make it clear that that's
speculative.
I don't know. That's the figure I've heard bandied around. So I don't know.
Really? But, well, I mean, now that's the chat. You know, I was going to say 2.5 to 3. I thought, so I was well out. And you know, that makes it, I mean, that's fair enough, you know, if you think of the development costs of the car. There's nothing unfair about those prices. But
just going back to Loubet, George, I've got to say, totally agree with everything you said about Loubet. I'd also like to add that he is just the nicest lad.
He is.
I know that's got absolutely nothing to do with it. But, you know, we finished talking to him yesterday and we wished him well and said, You know, enjoy your break and hopefully we'll see you back next year. Mm-hmm. And he was just about to drive off and he stopped his car and he got out and he came across to myself, to David and to Elliot, and he shook our hands and said, thank you very much for all your support this year. And then got back in his car and drove off to the podium, to the finishing ceremony. You know, we don't get that from every young driver.
No.
And, you know, and it makes a difference. It does make a difference.
Makes a
you
huge
know,
difference. It does.
I would love to see him succeed, as I would with all young drivers. And, you know, what an incredible job the guy's done. Whatever anybody might want to say, well, he's not quite got it there yet, etc. He's come to the WRC1 car too soon. Well, I don't think he has. I think sometimes it's a good idea to step back, and there's many drivers have done that and then come on to be champions, you know, and genuinely have done, or be champion challengers at the very least.
Absolutely.
But, you know, to get yourself there, it's a huge undertaking, an absolutely enormous undertaking. You need that much money. You know, you need to be bringing 2.5, 3, 4, maybe even £5 million a year to prove yourself at that level. Now, you know, in one way, we see great progress for the young man. But, you know, he's several years away before he would be getting given a factory paid drive, isn't he? Honestly.
He's got to be.
So he's going to have to find another minimum 2 years of money to prove himself. And he's got to, and to prove himself, you've got to be fighting at the front and consistently and finishing. You know, how many drivers are doing that? There are only 3 or maybe 4, possibly 5 at a push are doing that right now. You know, even the drivers that are being paid that are not winning, you know, Esa-Pekka Lappi, Timo Suninen, for instance, you know, they're not winning at the front. They're under massive stress. They're on the borderline of having to go and pay for their drives to prove themselves. But they are also stepping up. You know, I see Esa-Pekka Lappi stepping up, although I get the feeling there's a little bit of a merry-go-round there. You know, that great performance, I mean, I was thinking to myself, ease it back a little bit, mate. You know, on stage 3, ease it back. On stage 4, pull it back a little bit. Give yourself the latitude, because a mistake is quite clearly waiting to happen. And he was fighting all this great form and he was very comfortable with the car. And then, hallelujah, of course, there was a corner a little bit slipperier and it's a numbers game. And, you know, I mean, there wasn't that many corners between the start and him finding the one that had his name on it, because he didn't have enough margin. And it was all about that. You know, Kalle Rovanperä, he found his corner. Obviously, Elfyn Evans, he found his corner. You know, that was it. And a few other drivers. You know, I think there was the stage that Thierry Neuville thought was terribly dangerous. He obviously had a big moment in there. I didn't see it, but he obviously had some moments in there that he felt were unacceptably close to just losing it. And in the case of, you know, Elfyn and Kalle, they were measuring their risk. Both the places where those guys made a mistake, it was very nearly survivable for them both. It was survivable for Kalle Rovanperä. That's not an accident that it was survivable. He was choosing where to push and where not to push. You push where you know you've got a chance to survive, and the places where you know there's no chance to survive, you ease back. And that's, you know, again, there's mileage for Esa-Pekka required there on that one, you know. Still got to learn that lesson.
It's about experience and decision-making.
I'm Kellen Koschel, and I just did my first Dirtfish course, which was the one-day women's course. My biggest surprise was how calm it could be in the car, and the calmer I was, the faster I could make the car go. The surprising thing about driving was that it wasn't necessarily a mental thing. I had to really get out of my head and into my body more, and I just felt a little more comfortable doing that for the first time around a group of women. But I will say, I do feel like I could do any of the Dirtfish courses now. I kind of know what to expect, and you know, hopefully more women get into motorsports, and then any day could be an all-women's day if just enough of us are in the sport. If I were talking to someone who was thinking about taking a class, was kind of on the fence, it would be, you know, what are you waiting for? It's such a fun experience. You're going to really learn something, and you're going to push your limits, and maybe you'll even have some more confidence.
Just going back to, you were talking about the young drivers, we were talking a little bit about, obviously, Pierre-Louis Loubet and one or two other youngsters. You know, the flip side of that is Adrien Formeau. You know, he's been through his difficult year, and he seems to be very much on a similar kind of trajectory to where Elvin Evans was 5 or 6 years ago. Yep. You know, Evans, remember, had a torrid year, didn't he, in the WRC in a World Rally car. Was dropped the following year, was made to do, to learn his craft, you know, in the British Rally Championship. And then came back, and Evans went from strength to strength after that. Vermoor's following a very similar kind of, you know, slightly parabolic. Is that a word, George? Up and down trajectory?
Parabolic, yeah. Parabolic.
Your trajectory. And it is interesting because you can see it in the way that Vermoor holds himself, that he conducts himself. You can see it in his driving. He is very much on the way up right now. And I'm fascinated to see how Vermoor does in Japan. He got very, very prickly, and I mean prickly, when I asked him a question about, you know, does he see this as a bit of a test, you know, of where he's at, what he can do in a Rally One car. He got very prickly. I was disrespecting other drivers by suggesting that he could do well. Apparently, I wasn't suggesting he could win it. I was just suggesting that he could put in a performance. We mustn't, you know, we mustn't forget that Vermoor's had one season, a full season, more or less, in Rally One cars. So I suspect he can do a job. Luke, what are your thoughts on Vermoor and where he's at and what he can potentially do in Japan and maybe next year as well?
Well, I think the obvious thing to say, and excuse me, we have sort of mentioned it, I think last week actually, but the contrast to where he's at now compared to 12 months ago is obscene. Like it's a completely different driver. And I transcribed that interview, so I know the bit you're referencing, but I think it was a bit of a mistranslation. Maybe he wasn't quite understanding what you were meaning. But in that same, I can't remember if it was you that asked
him
the question.
Just to sort of stop you there, Luke, that'll be interesting when that comes out, because I think he got prickly about something else, which I'm going to mention in a second.
Okay.
But yeah, go ahead with your thoughts. Well, sorry, mate.
No, good. I can't remember if it was you or if it was David that asked him, but about his composure, his patience, is that the biggest thing he's learned this year? And he was fully in agreement with that. And I think that's, to me, that's the biggest thing that's changed with Vermoor now. And he mentioned that he talked about how if he felt like the stage was for him, he can push, he can go for it. If he didn't feel like it was for him, he'd bide his time. He struck me, and I remember it was my first WRC event properly. It was Croatia last year, so everything was learning quite a few things, but I can just remember how he was after he'd gone off. I can't remember what stage it was on the Friday morning in Croatia, but if for anyone who doesn't remember, he had that moment through, I think it was one of the first corners of the stage, and he went off and into
second stage or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very early, and he went into a guy's garden effectively with his car, but he was mainly annoyed that he hadn't had information from the team about the corner. And now, I don't know, obviously, what he was meant to be told, what he wasn't told, but it was all about how he didn't look inwards, essentially, is what I'm going with. It wasn't his fault, it was something else. It was like he's caught in his bubble, and I think he almost started too well when he went, because we all remember 12 months before that, his great debut in the WRC car, everything was just coming to him. But now he's had this time to sort of improve himself, along with the car, which has to be said, the Fiesta Rally 2 at the weekend. And I know, obviously, Vermoor was a great driver, but the speed was really impressive, really noteworthy.
Wasn't it
blinding?
Yeah. But to answer the question, I'm going on my own tangents. I do think he is in for a good result in Japan. I expect he will be quite cautious, maybe. I don't expect him to be looking at what anybody else doing other than himself, because I would personally be very, very surprised if he's not in a Rally 1 car next year. I think that's all but assured. But so I know where you're going
with this.
Here's my
thought. I've
teed you up.
Here's my thought, Luke. Here is my thought. Before he got prickly about the, you know, what you're going to do in Japan, I had said to him that we'd heard perhaps murmurings that his name was being considered for a seat at Hyundai next year. And I agree with you. I think we will see him in a Rally 1 car, but I'm not absolutely betting on it being a Puma. I tell you what, and it's what I talked about last week, guys. I just don't see this third car. I don't think, and David's written a great piece about Esa-Pekka Lappi and where Lappi's at in his career right now. I don't see, and I think we can reasonably comfortably say that third car is going to be a shared car next year at Hyundai. It's not going to be Danny Sordo by the sound of things, which I'm astonished at. You know, if you want to win a championship, You put Sordo in for 5 or 6 rounds. Let's assume it's not going to be Sordo, though, because that seems to be a fairly strong rumour. I cannot for the life of me see it being Lappi and Sunanen. That is madness. That is madness if that happens. So I think it's got to be Lappi or Sunanen and another. Now, you know, if I was choosing a youngster and they made a very, very big thing, a lot of noise, Hyundai, about junior development. Rightly so, planning for the future. You know, the likes of Tanak and Thierry Neuville won't be around forever. They've got to plan for the future. If you're talking about a junior driver there, the obvious one is Oliver Solberg. You know, I would put Oliver Solberg in there. But that doesn't seem to be the case either. Solberg doesn't seem to be being talked about. So who else do you look at? For me, Formo is the boy.
Absolutely.
He's the one that's there. The other one I would look at is the young French lad who crashed. Who was his name? Look, remind me. He's another one I've got a name locked.
Yeah, Johan Rossell.
Rossell. Rossell and Formo for me. And Formo, for me, is a step and a half above Rossell. But those two lads fill a proper need for that third car. You know, that third car with the Finn in it is going to be Sweden. It's going to be Finland. It's going to be, where are we going to? Latvia. And what is the third fast one we're doing next year? Poland. You know, your Finn is going to take all four of those and one or two others. You are going to need someone who can at least perform and bring the car home on tarmac. Adrian Formo, Johan Rossell. Someone like that, for me, is potential. And the number one, if we take Solberg out of it, has to be Formo for that seat.
Yep.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree.
Yeah, when you go back to young Oliver Solberg, obviously, you know, not being in the frame for anything in anyone's discussions or thoughts.
Mad.
It's slightly odd in one way because he has demonstrated great form this year, but what he hasn't demonstrated, I suppose, is a championship year. You know, he's somehow not managed to do that, and. You know, I think it's part of the suite is to show that you've got the speed and you've got the reliability. And he didn't really do that this year, which is an odd thing. I mean, I know that wasn't his target to do that. I want to show everyone I'm fast. I don't care about reliability. I don't care about X, Y, Z. I'm just going to go quick everywhere. I'm going to find out how to tackle. I'm going to use my WRC2 car to understand how fast I can drive a WRC1 car. That was his mode. Now, I think that's, from a personal development point of view, a fair approach. I wouldn't necessarily have come across that myself, but as, you know, horses for courses, it's his approach, and I think in many ways he's probably satisfied with that, and it may well have given him the development he personally needs. But what it's not done, it would appear, and we may be wrong with this because it's speculative and it's all very secretive, of course, within the realms of the teams, but he wouldn't seem to have put himself in the frame with the team managers, has he?
Well, not with Hyundai. And there may be more to that than we're understanding. We kind of touched on what went on there last year with Solberg. I don't know. It is a bit odd to me because Solberg is the very, very obvious choice. But take him out and for more is the boy. Guys, anything else before we... Because, you know, would you believe, boys, we have slightly gone backwards and forwards a little bit in this... Spin the rally pod, but that's an hour.
It's not, George. There's no way.
It's an hour of joyous rally talk.
We've not even got our first round up on the bar here, Colin.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? It's terrible.
The fire's just settling in. We've got another 2 or 3 hours to go here yet.
We can indulge ourselves for another 5 minutes. So if there's anything else that you boys want to bring up,
Mikkelsen,
before we wrap things up, Luke,
I think we have to mention Mikkelsen and WRC2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Congratulations.
Yeah.
What else do we have to mention about it other than congratulations?
I was going to say, I find it's in a way ironic because it was, and it feels harsh to call it his worst performance of the season, but that shows you how good Andreas' year has been before this.
Yeah.
I think everybody was getting caught out at some point in this rally, but again, he did what he had to do. And you mentioned it, George, there, about, I guess, the suite of showing that you can be fast but also reliable. To me, that is Andreas. And I know... maybe that wasn't always the case when he was in what was a WRC car at the time there, Rally 1. Whether if he ever got a chance to go back, would he then still be as ruthlessly efficient as he is? I don't know. Some drivers find it easier to be at the top of the game in Rally 2. But yeah, I think
he's shown that he can do it, Luke.
Yeah,
and it'd be hard to, you know, we talk about Adrian Formoe and we talk about Oliver Solberg, but actually, Andreas Mikkelsen, a proven multiple rally winner, you know.
Yeah, but Josh challenged at the front. No. We're talking about completely different situations, you know. We're talking about young development drivers against, you know, a guy.
Yeah, but ultimately, we're talking about a limited number of seats, and from a team's point of view, they want the best option. And for me, you know, if I was a team manager right now, Andreas Mikkelsen would be very much part of my discussion.
So George, having said no, I'm coming around to your way of thinking. If you can get Andreas Mikkelsen on,
sure.
We talked. Didn't take long, did it? But this is the thing, George, is I'm always willing to come round to your way of thinking.
Well,
the reverse is not always the case.
Occasionally is too, Colin. Occasionally is too. I'm trying to be a better person with you. Honestly, I really am. I've been trying all my life to be a better person to
George,
you.
George, it's never offended me, so don't worry about it. I always bow to your greater knowledge, experience,
and Andreas
expertise.
Mikkelsen, not to be dismissed. So, far from
so
it.
So, Andreas Mikkelsen, so if they do decide that next year that the manufacturer's title is more important than young driver development, which could well happen, right? Mm-hmm. It could well happen. If the pressure on a Bitterbo is to deliver a manufacturer's title, then let's forget about the young drivers. Let's put the strongest lineup in that we can.
Yeah, you know, and then your Danny Solgaard has to be
a Lappi
your man.
And a Mikkelsen. Well, Solgaard, but for some reason that doesn't seem to be the way. But a Mikkelsen and a Lappi, a Mikkelsen and a Sunninen. If Mikkelsen,
No, you've got three drivers basically the same.
Mikkelsen is a bit different, George. Mikkelsen, you will go and deliver for you, you know, on maybe the rallies that the Finns don't want to do. He will deliver. If he is at the point in his career, which I suspect he is, where he doesn't want to prove anything, you know, he's not looking to be, you know, taken up on a 3-year long-term contract and look to challenge for a world championship again. You know, if he is just prepared to play the game and say, yep, 5 or 6 rounds, I'll take a good salary for that, and I'll deliver exactly what the team wants me to deliver, which is a safety net for the top two. Bang, Mikkelsen could well be in there. But
if I was Andreas, I wouldn't accept that. I would want a full season. A full season. That guy's worth a full season yet, my view. Just purely on performance. And now I know when he had his year at Hyundai, he did not do well. He did not gel with the car, and he did not adapt himself to the car. He did not. You know, he lost his drive on lack of worthiness at that point. But I'll be the first to back him even though he's proving his worthiness now. I mean, I would certainly be giving him a test in my car. Let's say we came along with a brand new team right now, you know, and I had a chance. He would be one of my drivers that I'd be trying out.
Yeah,
not as a development driver, but you know, let's say I've got a clone Toyota team, you know, with 3 cars to run in the championship. He would be one of my right now. Let's say I've got three World Rally cars, you know, and a whole team to run. I would be in the current environment. Mikkelsen would be one of my drivers. So you've got a brand new team, another 3 drivers required. He would be 100% one of those drivers.
Who would be
next? You know, then you've got all your young drivers. You've got a Hayden Padden that's sitting there, a proven rally winner and very, very good. Made lots of mistakes, grown massively over the last years, chose to do the European Championship to keep himself in the frame, yet he would be getting a tryout as well. Not saying I would take any of these drivers, but they'd be getting a tryout. Of course, I'd be working very hard on Sebastian Ogier to come and be my number one driver and develop and build the team and you know, give him a slot. Just because of what the guy can do, you know, that's what else I'd be trying to get.
George, do you know what? That's a really good topic for another Spin the Rally Pod.
Okay. I was about to say, that sounds good.
So on the next Spin the Rally Pod, Luke, we are all going to be team managers with this new team, this fictional new team that's appearing in 2024.
Right.
So you are suddenly elevated to George Donaldson's position and you can choose your team. And what I'll say is, so we're going to choose 3 drivers, maybe 4 if we decide to go a split third seat, and an engineer to build the car for you. Ooh. So there's a bit of homework to think about. it could be interesting. Anything else, boys? Because we are now, shall I tell you what we're up to now? An hour and seven minutes.
Yeah, not quite.
Well, there we go. We better call it quits. And rather than tire out our very loyal listeners, whom... whom I want them to know that we deeply appreciate. And I do read all the comments on our WRC Live, and I see all the nice comments and compliments and requests and questions. I do occasionally try to answer on WRC Live.
Dirtfish Live.
Dirtfish Live Centre.
Do you? Have you been commenting, George? And have I missed you?
I do occasionally dip in. I did not dip in this weekend.
Okay.
I didn't dip in this weekend much. But I do read them all. And, I mean, there's some proper full-on rally fans. I don't know how many thousands we've got, but I hope it's many thousands. But you're welcome into our little pub chats, and it's lovely. And we should maybe do a live session at some point of our podcast and have a few minutes of questions coming in. Yeah.
Well, when we can all get together, maybe when I'm up in Scotland next, or when David's up in Scotland next, we could organise an evening where we just record it in a pub and just invite anyone in the vicinity to come along. That'd be quite interesting.
That's a fabulous idea.
Look, I have one last question for you before we go. Anything coming up this week that we can look forward to? You know, we've talked about Hyundai, maybe team announcements, Toyota team announcements, although I think they'll be a little bit more straightforward. Can we expect them this week? Can we expect those announcements to come?
You put me under supreme pressure there, Colin, to deliver something interesting. With Toyota, I don't know this, but I'd be very surprised if it's not the week of Japan, I think, or the week after, one of the two. It would make complete sense. Hyundai, who knows? There is a suspicion that they already know, but they just haven't communicated it. M-Sport, I think, will be quite a while still. But yeah, there's still plenty to talk about, plenty of interesting things still to come out from the Central European Rally that will be on dirtfish.com. Do the usual, pay attention, and there'll be plenty of good stuff. Colin mentioned a thing from Lappy. I think this is if you listen to this on Tuesday when it comes out, that should be coming tomorrow, I think, Wednesday, in the schedule. So yeah, plenty of good stuff coming, as always.
Yeah, well, hang on. And there's the massive announcement to come, which is the Toyota Satellite Team, full factory, three more cars, different names, still a Toyota. So Toyota have got two bites at the manufacturer's cherry. And I'll run it together with Luke and Colin. That's going to be fabulous.
So when we have this programme where we're going to become pseudo-team managers, you've got to come up with another brand. So a brand that you want, a car that you want in the
That is very, very easy with Toyota. We can because, Toyota have various brands in Japan, many brands, which are Toyota's badged differently. But they also have, the Lexus brand. So I'm thinking we could they could create a Lexus Yaris, sports car. And that's what it'll be. So we'll call it Lexus. So it's either Toyota or Lexus or Hyundai or Ford that are going to win the championship next year. Let's just call it Lexus. We'll have that.
You're giving away all your little surprises.
There's no surprises. It's just this fantasy rally before the year's up.
Fantasy rally boss.
We do need that fourth team coming in, don't we? A strong team like that. Maybe it could be a Hyundai. Mark II.
Who knows what it's going to be?
That's an easy one. They can do it with Kias, can't they? Because that's basically the same brand, isn't it?
George, is it not your dinner time yet?
It is. Bye bye. Good night, everybody. Yep.
Sorry, George.
Good morning, good evening, and good night.
you're on a roll, and I feel terribly guilty because I do love listening to you once you get on the roll, George. But Lisa keeps telling us that podcasts over an hour are not ideal. I'm going to say it has been a joy, Luke Barry. An absolute joy talking to you as always.
Thanks, Colin. Thank you, George. Fabulous.
Thank you, Luke. Yeah, thank you, Colin. Lovely, lovely.
George, it's been great. It's been great. Yeah. I can't wait to hear you next week. Folks, don't forget, there is plenty coming this week in terms of wonderful words on dirtfish.com. Lots of comment, lots of analysis, lots of words for you to read. So don't go too far away from dirtfish.com. If you missed any of the Central European Rally, you can go back and you can enjoy it all over again with, as George mentioned, our Dirtfish Live Centre. It all stays there. Any rally you want from the World Rally Championship this year, head across to the Dirtfish Live Centre. There's plenty there to keep you entertained. Folks, thanks very much for joining us on Spin the Rally Pod.